Good morning. This thing's throwing off my chi, so, all right. I'm glad I shaved. Jeremy is going to have a fun time with this right there in the gigantic beard of his, and it's going to sound like a whole lot of static, but it's just his whiskers. Don't worry about it. All right, so we're studying the book of Joshua. We've gone through 22 chapters, and now we're at the point where Joshua is going to do two assemblies. Two of the last three. The first one was in chapter 22 with the 2.5 tribes on the east of the Jordan. And I thought I was going to be able to do this lesson in one day. So I kind of lumped them together because they're final assemblies. They sound very similar. There's these final discourses, a lot like we see in other places in Scripture. But as I started studying it and really digging deep into it for preparing for this lesson, I realized we're probably not going to get through it all. So we'll probably talk chapter 23 today, and then, Lord willing, next week we'll talk chapter 24. However, your handout has both of them. So I'll probably have handouts next week just for those who didn't get them or who forgot them, but that handout will be good for this week and next. And, of course, you can take notes for anything that pops up between now and then for whatever I missed for the handout. And so today we're going to talk about chapter 23. Before we do that, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I had a question afterwards. Turn with me to Joshua chapter 21. We studied this, and it was the very last verse of that chapter that caught this person's attention. And it says, chapter 21, verse 45, it says, "Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass." And so the question was, but Abraham was given multiple promises, right? There were three promises, right? So what were the three promises in order? I'm going to make you a great nation. Land. I'm going to put that great nation in a great land. And what was the third one?
Bless all the other nations.
Yep. Through your seed, all nations will be blessed. And so we talked about that probably the first or second lesson, that these are very much, they're twofold, I guess, two-sided promises. They're the literal promises. I'm going to make you a great nation. Well, when the Israelites come out of Egypt, they're 2 to 3 million strong. So that occurred. That promise was fulfilled already. With the land promise, that's what Joshua is all about, right? Or that's what we read about in Joshua. Joshua talks about the conquering of the land, inheriting that land that God said, "I will put your great nation in." And then that final promise is, through all nations, through your seed, all nations will be blessed. And so we know that's not going to happen for a while. And so as I thought about this a few times over the last couple weeks, when the scriptures say, "Not one of a word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed, all came to pass," I think that's talking about in the context of the verses prior to that. So let's back up a little bit. Verse 43. And really this chapter is kind of wrapping up. It just talked about all the lands, the cities given to the tribe of Levi, the Levites. And that's when the writer is going to wrap up. Okay, I've allotted all the land. Everything has been divvied out, right? And so he's summarizing here everything he'd been saying since chapter 13, starting in verse 43. "Thus the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hands." And so these are a couple of the promises I think that the writer in verse 45 is referring to. When the Israelites were marching up, right, when they were in the wilderness, and you read in Exodus and Numbers, Deuteronomy, these promises were given to them. I'm going to give you, and we'll actually read some of them in chapter 23, other promises that were fulfilled. I'm going to give you lands you didn't prepare. This place was flowing with milk and honey. You didn't plant these vineyards. You didn't build these homes. You didn't do any of this, but I'm promising it to you. And so I think that in verse 45, what the writer is saying, that this generation was promised to inherit all these things. None of your enemies will be able to stand before you those promises came to pass. Jeremy.
And with a lot of promises and prophecies, you have a dual fulfillment. There was a way in which other nations were going to be blessed by these people who came from Abraham. We've already seen some of that happen. What you have in the case of Rahab is you have someone who is locked into a poisonous culture. Because of the situation that she's in, likely would never have been able to have a freedom from that culture, except the fact that they came into the land, and people who want to do right have the opportunity to be free from a lot of that poisonous culture, because they are coming in and they are getting rid of all of these nations that have just trash values.
Absolutely. And Rahab's a great example. We have, really, the Gibeonites is a great example. They're saved from death. They're water carriers and woodcutters, but man, ain't much better than that than be completely annihilated. And we also have plenty of, the law included sojourners among you, right? So non-Israelites could come in and they were treated almost like family. They were treated like family, right? They were included. That was part of the law, the benevolence that we were given to them. And we also have examples in the Old Testament of non-Israelites, Gentiles, right? Being accepted. Rahab is a good example of that. And so that's just some thoughts on that question. So if you had come across that, there are a few things in Joshua where if you don't think it through, it doesn't sound like it's true, right? When it says that Joshua did everything that he was supposed to do, and then later it says not all the land was, you know, conquered, you go, how do I reconcile that? But I think we've covered that. So, all right, any questions before we move on to chapter 23? Yeah.
The King James Version of 45 says, there failed nothing of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. Yours has interpreted
none of the good promises. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's kind of a material difference there.
Mm-hmm. And really, when in my studies, I noticed that there, when it says the good promises, that is added, actually. It's literally the things that God had spoken. He didn't need to make promises. He just said, I'm going to do this, right? And that's, it is what it is, because his yes is yes. Exactly, yeah. We can trust in that statement. All right, so chapter 23. So we just talked about the background. The location of chapter 23 is not mentioned. And so we'll talk a little bit about this a little bit later, because 23 and 24 have stark differences. And so we're going to compare and contrast. And I really have not come to a conclusion on timing and location and whatnot. And we'll talk through that as well. And then I'll leave it to you to make your own determinations. But since we're not told in the text, I don't really think it matters. I'll just throw that out there. So the outline of this chapter 23 is verses 2 through 11 is Joshua's encouragement, and verses 12 through 16 is Joshua's warning. And that's chapter 23. Chapter 24 has somewhat of a similar thing embedded into it. You can see on the screen here, 24 is split up. Verses 1 through 13 is a reminder of all the Israel's past. Here's everything that you have come through up to now, and God has provided for you. He has blessed you. And that meeting was at Shechem, so we'll talk about the significance of that probably next week. And then 14 through 28 is the covenant renewed. But in those verses, 1 through 28, you see that blessings if you obey, curses if you do not, promises both good and bad. And so we see a little bit of a pattern there. And then the verses 29 through 33 of chapter 24 is just kind of administrative. Who died, where they're buried, but there's plenty of lessons to be learned in that as well. Please don't, I'm not saying that flippantly. So again, when we come up on chapter 23 and chapter 24, we're looking at the second and third of the three speeches that Joshua gives to the Israelites. Notice that the book of Joshua as a whole starts and ends with speeches. The first speech, chapter 1, is a motivational speech. God speaks to Joshua and he motivates him, be strong and courageous. And then Joshua turns around and then he imparts that upon the people of Israel and says, you're going to go in and God has given you this land. Now it's just time to go take it. and then the people will actually encourage Joshua. At the end here, all of that's happened. And now Joshua is telling the people, God has been faithful to you. And he doesn't say, remember when I said this, but he does quote himself. But he does say, look, you've gotten everything that you've been promised, i.e. God has been faithful to you. God fulfilled his promises. And now he's pushing them towards steadfastness. And the thing that we've talked about multiple times is you need to be faithful and you need to teach your children to be faithful. And so the book of Joshua starts and ends with speeches. Chapters 23 and 24 are full of reminders we've all heard before. Remember where you came from. That's one of the lessons we'll look into. How you don't deserve what God has given you. That's a good one. And as a result, they should remain faithful and teach their children to do the same. So let's jump into the text. Joshua chapter 23. It says, now it came about after many days, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies on every side, and Joshua was old, advanced in years. All right, so the sequence of events here is very interesting. We'll kind of dip our toe into next week's lesson as well here. It says, after many days, Joshua called for all of Israel. But then he's giving them a reminder that although they inherited the land, they still needed to continue to drive out the Canaanites. That's what this meeting is about, really, primarily. This is the kind of speech that you think that would be given right after all the land had been given out. And it kind of was along the way, right? But it says after many days. Now, this is a figure of speech. This is not literal, I don't think. It could be days, weeks, months, could have been even years. We'll talk at the end of next week's lesson, we'll talk timeline as a whole, but we just don't know, right? There are speculations out there. I certainly would not be combative about it. But the lack of time or location and the theme of the speech lends me to believe that it wasn't too long after the land was inherited. But I know there are people who believe that this was... Joshua was 110 when he died. They believe that this was right before he died. The next chapter, chapter 24, starts out right immediately after this speech. And it says, then Joshua assembled them at Shechem. And, okay, so does that mean this speech in 23 happened? And then he got everybody down to Shechem and then continued his speech? Did they adjourn and did they come back? Again, not really sure. We do have a hint later in verse 14. Now behold, today I'm going all the way of the earth. Again, today is not literal. That is another figure of speech. David actually uses that figure of speech when he's talking to Solomon. So I'm saying all this to say we don't know when this speech occurred. We don't know where this speech occurred. We know Joshua lived to be 110, and he's saying, I'm nearing the end of my time. And so it's after all the inheritance, all the tribes have inherited the land, and they come back together. And then later, at least I think, in chapter 24, they meet at Shechem. Also, it says, verse 2, that Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders and their heads and their judges and their officers, and said to them, I am old, advanced in years. So I did see some commentary that said this meeting was just with those elders, with those people, those officers. It says that he called for all Israel. That may be literal and it's everyone. But again, the meeting place is not given here. I can believe that they could all come together at Shechem because you had two mountains. Remember the amphitheater effect that I showed you, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim there at Shechem. Again, we're not sure, but he's given them a pep talk to make sure they remain steadfast in driving out the Canaanites. And then it says, I am old, advanced in years. Old is relative, right? I look around the crowd. Old is relative, especially when you are when you live to be 110. And God has said to Joshua, you're old and advanced in years, and if God's telling you that, then... So old is relative. So again, not sure when this was. Verse 3, and you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you, for the Lord your God is he who has been fighting for you. See, I have apportioned to you these nations which remain as an inheritance for your tribes, which with all the nations which I have cut off, from the Jordan even to the great sea toward the setting of the sun. The Lord your God, he will thrust them out from before you and drive them from before you, and you will possess their land just as the Lord your God promised you. So what he's saying here is, hey, you went in and I fought for you, right? So this is Joshua talking. In chapter 24, Joshua will actually say, thus says the Lord, and then he'll quote God. So this is Joshua talking. He's saying, God went before you. He helped us. He fought for us. He helped us conquer this land. But now you need to go and finish doing it. He will be with you just like he was with us. So Joshua is telling them their work is not finished. Just because you endured this campaign and God has blessed you, you can't sit back and take it easy. And so that's our first application for today. There are no retirees in church. And I put it that way because I have seen older folks, older Christians, who get to be a certain age and then they say, I'm done. I've done my part. Older ladies, right, who say, I don't need to teach anymore. I've taught for 50 years or whatever, right? I'm not saying they need to still teach, but they still have to play a part. You cannot retire. You cannot sit back. You cannot be a pew warmer, if you will. Joshua is bringing this crowd together because he's saying, look, guys, I'm going to die. I'm not going to be around forever, right? And so he's encouraging them. So even in his old age, even when he's about to die, he's imparting wisdom. He's giving them, you know, these pep talks. He's telling them, remain steadfast. Teach it to your children. Keep going. He's not retiring, and he's telling them they have a part to play as well. So everyone in the church has a part to play, and the only rest that we get is with the eternal rest. God expects us to work until we are horizontal forever. Jeremy.
Well, I mean, he's also going to use himself as an example. Mm-hmm. He puts it on them. He says, you know, I don't know what you got, but I know what I'm going to do.
Yep.
Well, and so we'll get to that 20-24, but he is saying that, I think you're right. He says, look, the work is not done, and I think that is a mentality that we need to maintain. I think it's very well said. That's why the Hebrew writer, he says, if Joshua had given them rest, then he wouldn't be talking about the final rest.
Right.
The Hebrew writer absolutely brings this same point home. Yeah, okay, you've done great, and it's great, that's great, but there is still work to do. If you think you've reached the final rest, and you're not listening to Psalms, you're not listening to Joshua, these people continue to press forward, and that's the attitude we need to have.
Absolutely. And there's one point in these final discourses where Joshua says, you're not going to be able to do it. And he's not literally necessarily talking to them, but we need to take that in consideration as well. We cannot be perfect in the true sense of the word. We can be complete. We can continue to remain faithful and come back when we stumble, but we're not going to be perfect. So as an Israelite, I'm sitting in the audience and I'm going, okay, eventually in our future, it has been foretold that we are going to follow idols. We're going to fall away. I'm not going to be that guy. And I'm not going to let my children be that guy either, right? And so really, this is a call to steadfastness on my part and pass it on to my children and teach them to do the same so that we push off that falling away and that exile and that, you know, in slavery, enslavement as far as possible. So we will talk about that when he makes that comment. I'm sure that's probably going to bring up some pretty good comments. So don't think because... just quick note, don't think that because you've lived a long life and younger people start to do jobs in the church that you don't have to do anything, that you can retire. All right, verse 6. So here's his he's trying to convict him here. He says, be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left. Remember when I said he quotes himself? He didn't quote himself. He quotes chapter... This is actually in chapter 1. So go ahead and turn to chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1. So this was very familiar to me. Not only here. It's in your notes. There are other places as well. But this is what God tells him. This is God's like pep talk. He's kicking him in the tail. And he's saying, you're going to go do this. He starts verse 6, be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. And so he's telling him, he's Joshua is telling the Israelites the same thing that God had told him. And when we, if you go back and you read chapter 1, there are things that we're not told that Joshua tells the Israelites, like be strong and courageous. Joshua is told that by God. He goes and tells the Israelites other things, and then the Israelites tell him, be strong and courageous. So I don't know if Joshua said that to him. The writer of Joshua didn't tell us that Joshua said that, be strong and courageous, to the Israelites. So we also don't have any indication where Joshua tells the Israelites until now the same thing that God told him. Do not turn to the right or to the left from it. Again, this is something else that was familiar in other scriptures. Proverbs 4:27 says it, but also Deuteronomy 5:32, and then Deuteronomy 28:14. So what was Deuteronomy 28? That was Moses' farewell discourse. So you're going to see here, especially in the next chapter, but here as well, Joshua is using terminology that Moses did. Verses or chapters 23 and 24 is a sermon copied from Moses. So I do not feel bad about stealing anybody else's sermon anymore because that's exactly what Joshua does here. But it's so applicable, isn't it? Because Moses gives his final discourse. He gives the promises and he gives the blessings and the curses, the promises if you do well and the promises if you do not do well. And that's right before they go into the promised land. And now Joshua is doing the same exact thing at another pinnacle moment. These things, you have been prospered in all these things. These things have all come to pass. But before you get nice and comfortable, I'm done, realize there's more to do. And you still have to obey. There's still something to do. And you cannot falter. You cannot lose hope. Any questions or comments? Okay. Verse 7, he says, why? We've heard this before, right? This came from Exodus. But he tells them why not to turn aside from it, right, to the right hand or the left. He says, so that you will not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you are to cling to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day. This should be familiar to them. Now realize that we're probably talking, the book of Joshua is years long, right? So we can sit down and read the book of Joshua from start to finish in a couple hours. And so because we have that convenience, I get the notion of this happened back to back to back to back. They've been reminded over and over and over. There may be years between these reminders. They were told to read the book of the law every year, but even still, I can't remember things from last week. So yearly reminders is like, okay, I was talking to my wife yesterday. We have camp every year, and I every year have to remember names. Now, what was her name? Because I know them 1 week, once a year, and then I go back the next year, and it's like, man, I remember all the good times. I just can't remember your name. And so my memory is horrible. But notice the charge he gives to them. This obedience must take the form of separation. They were to live in the world physically, but they had to remove the evil in their midst. And so that's the next lesson that we have. It's very mainstream, be in the world, but not of this world. But it is biblical, right? We need to be in this world, but we need to separate ourselves from the evil in this world. Do not take part of it. And that we need to make sure that we put our love and our trust in God and not in the things of this world. And so what Joshua is saying here is he's saying that, again, you've gotten all these great things. He's going to go into exactly how great it was and what a gift it was. But be careful, because if you love those things a little too much, you can put your trust in those things. And you can get lackadaisical, and you can start accepting the sin in the world. And so the lesson to us is don't let sin exist among you, or it will become your idol. In some ways, you can't help things being in your life, but you need to eradicate everything that you can that could cause a stumbling block to you. And that's a lot of what Joshua is saying. These peoples are, and they already see, well, they don't see the effects of it. Well, they did see the effects of it. So the Gibeonites was a great example of that. He didn't use it here, but the Gibeonites were allowed to remain amongst them. So he's probably taking this as a, well, I've been there and I've done that and I've seen it, so make sure it doesn't happen to you. Right.
So in this situation, he says, "Don't surround yourself with those snares."
My grandfather, I remember he always said that if you ask a rich person how much more money before you're complete content, you're happy, he will always say just a little bit more, no matter how much money he has. Right. And when you break down the concept of idolatry, it's not worshiping an idol necessarily, although that's where it started. It's putting something above God. And it's even for us, we think of that immaterial things, our possessions, our money, whatever. But it's also these concepts of, well, if I only had that characteristic in my life, and you strive so hard for that characteristic, and if it's a worldly one, then you're just spinning your wheels. There's no true value in that. And so anything other than God being put first in your life is idolatry. And that's tough. That's real tough. Yes, ma'am. I think, and when it comes to those non-immaterial things, you have to look to, okay, is it a scriptural thing? What are your motivations, right? So what Jeremy was talking about is that other person has this quality. Am I going to do everything I can to be like that person? Or if it's love and you see it exemplified by somebody, you say, that's a good example of the love that God talks about in the scriptures, and that's what you strive after. I think there's nothing wrong with that. When you put trying to obtain something above God, though, unless it's trying to obtain godliness, I think it absolutely is an idol. But there are concepts that if God says you need to be like this, you need to have these attributes, then I don't think it's wrong to pursue those diligently. Michael, thought?
It's nice to observe good qualities in people. I mean, we do use people. I mean, obviously, the Lord uses people as a
absolutely. Absolutely.
The moment we try to emulate a man other than God himself, we might get into trouble. So if we always keep Jesus as our standard, we won't go wrong.
Jesus is the perfect example. Other people amongst us will be imperfect examples. And they may have great qualities. My daughter is just keeps saying, I have a heart like Jesus, Daddy. And so she goes to school, and they teach her this, I have a heart like Jesus. And she does. She goes to Toys R Us, and I'm going to brag on her a little bit. She had a piggy bank. We cashed it in for the move and said, okay, you can go to the toy store, and you can get whatever you want with this money that you have. And so she got something for her, and then she got something for Grider. And they were two different things. So she gets home, and it's this little stuffed dog, and she gives it to Grider, and so that's her... I have a heart like Jesus, right? And she's trying, she's striving to have a heart like Jesus. I would be flattered if she said, Daddy, I have a heart like you, because I see you giving, right? But you need to strive after Jesus, his example. And so I really like that her teachers have imparted that on her, and that she Boy, she's clung to it. She said it about 4 or 5 times this week. So we need to make sure that we have the right example, right person in our sights when we go after those things. But those are definitely, there are biblical concepts that we can seek after for sure. Any other comments or questions before we go on? All right. So be in this world, but not of this world. Verse 9, and he tells them why. For the Lord has driven out great and strong nations before you. And as for you, no man has stood before you to this day. Again, some skeptics may say, well, what about AI? True. Take one did not end well. But take two, they were not able to stand against them. And we have an explanation of that, so I think we can talk through that. Verse 10, one of your men puts to flight 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised you. So he's saying, it's not the one man who puts away 1,000, it's the one man with God behind him that puts away 1,000. So take diligent heed to yourselves to love the Lord your God. For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip to your on your sides, and a thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. Joshua is a prophet. This is from their past as well. They intermarried with idolaters, and they paid dearly for that. But Michael's going to talk about it, I'm sure, if he hasn't already. In Judges, this doesn't take very long to pass. In fact, once Joshua passes on, and the folks that were trained under him, taught under him, passes on, it doesn't take them very long to start doing the very thing he said, guys, don't do this. And so he starts in verse 14 with this, look, guys, I'm not going to be here forever. And obviously it applies. We get the reader's advantage of knowing the rest of the story here. But now behold, today I am going all the way, behold, today I am going the way of all the earth. It's a very poetic, eloquent way of saying, guys, I'm going to die. Is really what that is. There's also a lesson in that. Again, that don't put your trust in things of this world, because all of the earth is going to die. Moth and rust will destroy. Things will die and decay. And so I'm not going to be here forever. So this quote actually makes me think he's nearing the end of his life, but he still sticks around to make another speech. So this, again, timeline, we're not really sure. And as I said before, in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 2, we won't go there, but this is exactly what David says to Solomon. I am going all the way of the earth. And he didn't die immediately, by the way, either. So it's just it's when you see David and Solomon, father and son, you see Joshua, the leader, and the people, this is like that fatherly figure. You know, if you've ever heard your father or somebody say that to you, I'm not always going to be around here to bail you out. Right? Grace climbs a big old tree. Daddy, I can't get down. All right, I'll come help you. But you need to realize that when you get up into a tree, I'm not always going to be around to be able to pull you down. And so you need to realize what you're getting into and think through it before you get yourself into that, because I won't always be around to, in this case with Joshua, I won't always be around to be an example for you and to keep prodding you to be faithful and keep you on the right track. And that's what he's saying. Fortunately, we have a God who is willing to bail us out of sin, not necessarily the consequences of our actions. David found that out. But he's always there to support us as well. And so he continues on, verse 14, I'm going the way of all the earth. And you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you, so that's how we led this morning, right? The promises concerning you, none of them has failed. All have been fulfilled for you, not one of them has failed. It shall come about that just as all the good words which the Lord your God spoke to you have come upon you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the threats until he has destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. Does this start to sound familiar now? I'm going to die. So now, these are the good things that happen to you if you obey. These are the bad things that will happen to you if you disobey. When you transgress, when you, not if you, when you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, then the anger of the Lord will burn against you, and you will perish quickly from off the good land which he has given you. He's kind of repeating himself here. I think it's intentional. So here again, we find a farewell discourse. I spoke about it, I believe it was last week. I gave you some examples. Now, this time, they're in your handout. Deuteronomy 28 is initially where our mind should go. Deuteronomy, go ahead and turn there. Your Bibles probably give you a real quick outline, gives you the headers. Deuteronomy 28. There are two headers in my Bible, and I checked the ESV. This is the ESV. I checked the NASB as well. Does everybody have two headings within that chapter? Miss Teresa, what's your two headings?
Blessings for obedience, curses for disobedience.
Does anybody have anything different? Right? It's pretty consistent. It's pretty, everybody kind of understands. There are two themes. There are two key points, two takeaways. If you obey, here are the blessings. And they're pretty nice if you read through these in Deuteronomy chapter 28. That goes for 14 verses. Then there are curses for disobedience. Point number two, Moses preaches two-point lessons. Jeremy, Moses preaches two-point lessons. He was. He probably didn't. Well, he was just as young as he was when he was 40. Just as strong. But then he goes on in his second point from verse 15 to verse 68. Here are the curses. And they are bad. Read through them and you're like, man, I don't want any part of this. No wonder this was part of the law every year you had to read. This is scary stuff. And it's like three times the length of the blessings. Which part do you think Moses is emphasizing? The curses for disobedience. And so we see a two-sided coin, which is the loving kindness of God. I will give you blessings when you obey, but there are consequences if you do not. And so there are a few ways to motivate people, right? Positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement. The hope of heaven, right? Or the fear of hell are two valid motivations for obeying God. And there are others. Jeremy and I have talked about this ad nauseum. That's exactly what we see in these farewell discourses. There's encouragement in this. And we can't overlook that. But there is also some warnings. And so the other examples I give you are in John, 2 Timothy, 2 Peter, Revelation. Revelation starts out with, here's what the good is about you, but this I have against you. And so this two-sided coin is really something that we see. So Joshua pleads with the people to see God's faithfulness, both fulfilling the good promises and the bad. This chapter, chapter 23, begins with God's rest and closes with God's anger, and it's a pattern in Scripture. Psalm 95 is a good example of that as well. I don't think I kept that in your notes. We hear about the greatness of God in verses 1 through 5, the nearness of God in verses 6 through 7, and then the hardness of our heart in verses 7 through 11. So it takes an ugly turn there. One quote from a commentator says, all of which suggests that God will even ruin the cheerfulness of a psalm if it will wake us up to our unbelief and hardness of heart. We prefer happy endings, but there is nothing wrong, really to our benefit, if an unhappy ending leads us to faithfulness. It shows us the kindness and the severity of God. We forget either one to our peril. I'll pick up the thought after, I think, Daniel first.
People often stumble over verse 14 because they assume that Joshua means that the promises are complete. And that's not what Joshua means. This is still in progress. They haven't claimed all their inheritance yet. And the point he is making is that up to this point, God has kept his promise. Every thing that you have gone after, God promised, he's given it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Long as they uphold their end of the covenant.
Yeah.
It's not because God didn't give it to them. It's because they just didn't go out and get it.
Absolutely. You want to talk about your lesson on Friday night?
Real briefly, and I mean super briefly, one of the things that's important that after the blessings and cursings that are announced and also recited, of course, in Joshua, it then said, Moses says in Deuteronomy 30, he says, "Behold, I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse."
Choose life.
A reference even back to the garden. He says, now you have to choose something. Mm-hmm. Now, what is excellent about this final discourse in Joshua? Exact same thing.
It is.
He gives them the blessing and the cursing in 23. 24 is, so what are you going to do about that?
You've got to choose the right side of the coin.
Right. Now it's time to put that into action.
And it's a good point that Daniel makes, because the choice was on them. They were responsible and therefore accountable for their own actions. And Joshua is just giving you this kind of, can't say I didn't warn you, can't say I didn't tell you, and can't say you haven't been told for the umpteenth thousandth time. You know what's right, you know what's wrong, and you have to choose. Michael. That is a really great point, and we actually have that point, although not that, I love that verse, by the way. We have that point in chapter 24, and we'll come back to that, and I am adding Proverbs 30 to that. When you get prosperity, don't think, don't rely on that and get too comfortable. Yes, ma'am. Yes. I thought about that with Daniel's comment.
Yeah. But those who have to love God and the truth. And if you let you believe the strong religion, which goes right back to what you're talking about in Deuteronomy 28:20, if the Lord will send them the curses, confusion, and frustration, it's no different.
Yep.
In the New Testament, still there's no difference.
Absolutely. These are lessons for us to learn today. I thought you were saying 1 Corinthians, I'm sorry. So what, Daniel, with your comment, God is giving them a task. God gave the Israelites a task before they even crossed the Jordan, and now we see those things come to pass. Joshua did everything that he was told by God to do, and now the mantle, if you will, is being handed down to the Israelites, the tribes, go finish the job. I am reminded of 1 Corinthians 10, 12 and 13, therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall, kind of to Michael's point. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful. He will not let you tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation he will also provide a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. I understand the context is talking a little bit about different, but think about the attribute of God. He's not going to give you more than you can handle. If he asks you to do something, you can do it no matter how arduous the task looks, but you have to put your trust in Him and realize it's probably not going to be you that does it. It's going to be God that helps you through it. And so back to the point here, we see the good and the bad, the promises that are given to the Israelites, and the promises that are, like Ms. Teresa's saying here, the promises that are for us as well. And so these things can either speak to us and motivate us into action in a good way or in a bad way. And so Romans 11:22 says, "Behold then the kindness and severity of God. To those who fall, severity, but to you, God's kindness, if you continue in His kindness. Otherwise, you will also be cut off." This is the same sermon. It's copied again. Look at that. That's awesome. So Paul's saying the same thing in Romans. He was like, look, you've been prospered. You've been given this promise. It can continue, but it's a promise to be cursed if you the severity of God for those who do not put their trust in God. And so we need to give both the respect and recognition that they deserve. And so in the denominational world, you'll see people that'll lean real heavily on God's what they call love, and He's so nice, but there's still severity there. And you've got to understand that, and you've got to respect that without saying, you know, going to the other end of the spectrum and saying God isn't loving, for sure. Any last questions or comments? Okay, thank you for your time and attention. We'll pick up on chapter 24 next week.